We've all been, at some point in our lives, unsure which button to press. And we know the wrong one can be a disaster.
World, the time has come to
push the button.
World, the time has come to
push the button.
World, the time has come to
push the button.
World, my finger is on the button.
Now to buttons. How many buttons do you push in a day? If you work, unless you're on the ground floor, there's definitely the elevator. You might have a push button start on your car. Let me see, what else would you push? You might push a button on your toaster. Whole range of things. Push the button on the Vitamizer to make the smoothie. Buttons, buttons everywhere. What about the days before buttons? And what does it mean to push a button? To chop up vegetables, for example, instead of doing it yourself? Are we distancing ourselves, not just from the manual labour, but from being the person who does it? Because we actually don't do it now, do we? The button tells something else to do it. Rachel Plotnick is an assistant professor of cinema and media studies at the Indiana University, Bloomington. And she's written a book, Power Button, A History of Pleasure, Panic and the Politics of Pushing. So we thought we'd better talk to her about buttons. Rachel Plotnick, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Do you use the term in the United States, yes, I know how to push his buttons?
Absolutely, yes. I think that's a metaphor that really lots of people use, you know, just a way to think about our bodies in some ways as machines, and you can activate us or make us angry, make us happy by the way you push our buttons.
Yes, I think the person who says it is saying to themselves or and to whoever they're speaking, I am in control, I know how to control that person.
I think that's absolutely right. And this idea that the button is a kind of control mechanism, not just for machines, but also for people, is one that's really kind of popular in our imaginary.
Yeah, sure. So what's the history of thinking about buttons? It's not something people are just thinking about today, is it? People a long time ago recognized, if you like, the risks associated with button pressing.
That's right. Yeah, I really became kind of fixated on this question of how did we become a society that was really fascinated by push buttons, that thought we should carry out work and play and communication all by pushing buttons. And I didn't really know where that question was going to lead me. The word button has been around for a really long time. It goes all the way back to the 14th century French bouton, which means to push or thrust forward. So we've had the idea of a button for a really long time, and then of course clothing buttons. But the idea of actually pushing a button as a mechanism that we would use to carry out actions really came much later, toward the end of the 19th century. And I began to look at different early technologies that had push buttons, like the telegraph that had that bulbous key at the end that was called a button, early typewriter keys that would be called buttons, or electric buttons to ring bells for servants. Those were some of the earliest examples of push buttons.
Yeah, when I was a kid, in the dining room of the house we moved into, there was a rectangular box on the wall, and you could go and press a button on the box, and it would click down. It was connected electrically, I think, to the rest of the house. And presumably, decades before, when people had staff in the house, they could go and look at this other box and say, oh, someone in this room wants me. A way of summoning people. It seemed very impersonal to me and unsatisfactory. Now, tell me about the push button man.
Yeah, I talk a lot in the book about gender. I think this is one of the most interesting themes that emerged when I was studying this question of push buttons at the turn of the 20th century. A lot of people complained about the push button manager, you know, who was usually a man who would sit behind his desk, and he'd have this whole array of buttons where he would just push them to call different employees for different things. And people were really kind of angry about that idea of the male push button manager, because they felt that he was abusing his privileges by just summoning people at his beck and call. And eventually people were so angry about it that he sort of lost his reputation. People felt that he didn't deserve his position anymore. And so the climax of the story involves him having to destroy all the buttons on his desk. And he says that he's going to become a self-made man who starts from the ground up. And I think it's a really symbolic, interesting story, because he has to literally destroy buttons in order to sort of remake himself. And this, I think, was what a lot of people thought about push button managers at the turn of the 20th century, was that they were abusing their positions by being lazy and pushing buttons all day. And I think it really came to signify kind of this difference between what I call manual labor and digital labor, where the people doing manual labor had to respond to the button, but the people doing digital labor just got to push with their fingers.
And in the book, how did that end up?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that we continue to complain about that issue today. You know, people who abuse buttons, who take advantage of their position. In the States, you know, the most recent example was Matt Lauer, who was a newscaster and on television, who was very famous and got in a lot of trouble for summoning people into his office with a secret button under his desk. And, you know, it became a really big story in the news about people taking advantage of pushing buttons to sort of control the comings and goings of others. And so I think that's kind of been a longstanding concern that has been expressed in different ways through our society, this question of gender and who gets to push and has the power to control that button.
And what do you say about the arguments that some political writers have put forward about automation, really? It's not so much just the button, but by pressing a button, a man can get a number of things done that would have previously required manual labour of him, and that in itself is taking away from humans the role of them being needed. Now, I'm not sure about that. I mean, it does take away the physical labour, but it requires an understanding of the technology and maybe our minds and our humanity, if you like, shifts into this other type of work. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think buttons have long really been that symbol of automation, and people have talked about for a long time, all the way back to Karl Marx, making the argument that eventually human beings just will become appendages of machines, and that buttons are really indicative of that we've become spectators where we just watch the machine do its work, and we don't really understand, as you said, what happens behind the button or how it works. But I do think that that's a pretty limited way of understanding button pushing, because as I talk about in my book, you have to have a lot of sort of contextual knowledge, social knowledge, appropriate cues in order to know which buttons to push under which context. And buttons often aren't as simple as they really seem on the surface. Anyone who's ever tried to program a universal remote or use some of the technologies in their home can tell you that if you don't understand exactly what the button's going to do, it's actually pretty complicated. So I think
Who hasn't had a piece of equipment in their home with a number of buttons and been reduced to the frantic, you know, frenzy of pressing all the buttons to try and get something to work? So it's everywhere, isn't it, really?
It is, and I think in that way buttons tend to be either too simple or too complex or both at the same time. You know, on the one hand, someone can accidentally push a button and that sets a whole range of activities into motion, like a child pressing every button on the elevator. Or on the other hand, they can be really complex and you just feel sort of flummoxed and don't know what to do. So I think it is reductive to just say all the time that buttons are easy to use in that way.
Mm. I'm talking with Rachel Plotnick. She's an assistant professor of cinema and media studies at Indiana University, Bloomington, and she's written a book about the power button, a history of pleasure panic and the politics of pushing. Now, Rachel, are you a photographer of sorts?
I myself am not a photographer, but I spent a lot of time researching photographers and looking at the question of cameras and buttons on cameras because it's such an interesting question.
Well, you remember the Kodak advertising slogan for the Brownie camera?
Mm-hmm. You press the button, we do the rest.
That's right. And some photographers hate automatic cameras because they'll autofocus. You just have to line up the little dot in the lens on where you want to focus and press a button. They'll set the aperture, they'll set the shutter speed, yada, yada, yada. And they say it's not photography if you're doing that. You're just pressing a couple of buttons. Someone else is doing the work. I'm not sure about that, but it's a good example of where buttons have sort of taken over the world. I mean, I've got a camera. I'm not sure what all the buttons are for. It's all a bit, perhaps a bit more complicated than doing it manually, really, because I've got so many choices.
I think that's really one of the interesting things about buttons is that people assume, kind of back to our discussion about automation, that buttons inherently mean that you're sort of de-skilling labor, de-skilling these tasks. And even in the early 20th century, photographers were really anxious about what it meant to put cameras in the hands of amateurs. You know, all of a sudden anyone could push a button and take a photo. And I think you still see that same kind of anxiety around selfies. You know, anyone who thinks they can take a picture as good as a professional. And we see that in lots of other arenas as well. Video game players who think they're better than button mashers, or people who assume that you're sort of lazy and unskilled just because you push buttons. So it's a pretty common stereotype, even though I think it doesn't always ring true.
You lost me a bit there, where you said video game players who think they're better than button mashers. I don't know what a button masher is.
You know what? It might be a US expression, but I've noticed it comes up a lot. People will say a button masher is someone who will just furiously push as many buttons as possible on their controller without really having any kind of strategy or skill associated with pushing.
Yep. Well, let's turn to the serious aspect of buttons. You know, whenever there's an election for president of the United States, you can guarantee somebody will do an article with a picture of one of the candidates saying, "Do you want this person's finger on the button?" Meaning a button for nuclear warfare. But that's probably just the most prominent example of being able to kill lots of people by pressing a button. But if you go back to early warfare, if you want to kill someone, you had to get out a sword and stab them, look them in the eye and stab them. Rifles, maybe you didn't have to look them in the eye, but you had to see the person there, aim for them, pull the trigger and see them fall. Now you can be in an aircraft, you can be in a box, a black box almost, somewhere on the other side of the world. Push a button and watch what happens and people will be killed. So that sort of, not sort of, it dramatically distances the human from the act of taking other people's lives.
Yes, I think this is a really fascinating topic. And in my book, I talk a lot about this, both sort of people, even in the 1800s, imagining what push-button warfare would look like, talking about it as sort of an inhumane way of killing people. As you said, that it sort of takes away that intimate, interpersonal element of taking a life. I also saw this come up a lot in discussions about the death penalty and what it meant to take a person's life by pushing a button, you know, by actuating electricity in that way. So I think we are fundamentally pretty uncomfortable with this idea of one push triggering such an irrevocable, profound action, you know, taking human lives. And even though the nuclear button is a fiction, there is no such thing as one big red button that someone can pull up the world. It looms very large in the way we talk about buttons to this day.
Well, where do we end up? Having spent so much time researching buttons, what's your final comment on the future of us and button technology?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You know, it seems in many ways that we're moving toward technologies that don't have as many or even any buttons on them. If you think about a lot of the voice-activated assistants we have now on smartphones and smart home technologies, or other kinds of games we play where we wave our hands or just use gestures to move things. And I often see a lot of designers talking about this idea that they'd like to get rid of buttons altogether. The death of the button is right around the corner. But to me, if anything from my research, what I learned is that as much as a society we tend to complain about push buttons, they're such an ingrained and ubiquitous technology that is part of our everyday lives. And so for me, the most interesting questions are not, are buttons good or bad, or are they going to go away or not? But how can we begin to think more deeply about how they're entrenched in our daily lives and what they mean to us as a society?
Rachel Plotnick, Assistant Professor of Cinema and Media Studies at Indiana University, Bloomington. Thanks for joining us and talking about pushing the buttons.
Thank you.